Testing. How does that sound?
Testing.
John, you're a bit of a low talker.
I got kind of a...
You're kind of a low. But welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show. We're live here with John Ashworth. We're sitting al fresco. We've done a couple podcasts outside. Maybe this is only the second.
Really?
We did Sean Tully at the Meadow Club a few months back.
Right.
And now we're back at the Goat. The Goat Hill. And, well, I just was... we were talking about hearing your own voice.
It's kind of weird.
Is it weird for you?
A little bit. That's all right.
I guess it's that a lot of people aren't... You don't get a chance to do it very often.
I'm in my head right now.
Are you? Literally.
Yeah, literally.
You're all John.
It is really weird because you can totally hear your voice in your head.
Right. Do you want to stop it or do you like
no,
it?
No, I think I'm going to try it. I'm going to see if I like it.
I was going to tell you a quick story about...
Yeah.
Because I... You know, I never wanted to be on camera. I would never think of starting a podcast.
Right.
Because I don't have anything to say. That's at least what I tell myself. Mm-hmm. And while that may or may not be true, I was asking people at the end of Be the Ball what they thought of the experiment that we did. We taught all these golfers to meditate. And I said, what was your favorite part of doing the movie? And they said, listening to your meditations. You have a very calming voice. I recorded these 10 meditations, and I was like, huh. And then someone was like, you start a podcast. And I was like, all right, fuck it. Let's do it. So that's a big reason of why we're here. Let's start by, for the people that don't know where we are, let's get them up to speed. And I apologize because I could imagine you've probably answered this question or at least spoken about this generally 600 times, maybe?
Probably.
A lot.
Yeah.
So you probably got the pitch down.
Yeah.
So just hit us
I'll
with
try
it.
To change it a little bit.
I mean, I can also chime in.
The Goat Hill Park pitch?
Goat Hill Park.
Yeah. No, it's just this little cool place.
I apologize, but it is important to hear you say it.
No, it's a great story, and it's a great place. And I mean, you got to go way back to 1952.
Wow.
That's when it was first built.
What was it before 1952?
Just probably a barren piece of land.
Wow.
But I think back 300 years ago, if you were an Indian, wouldn't you be right here, kind of?
I mean, we're sitting right outside the clubhouse, and we've essentially got... almost a 360 view of a beautiful sunset and palm trees. Well, the palm trees weren't here then.
You can see the ocean. You know, it's a mile from the ocean.
Right.
You know, it's a little microclimate because it's up on the hill. So in the wintertime when there's frost, we don't get frost.
Really?
In the summertime when it gets really hot, we get a nice ocean breeze. So it's really a nice spot. You know, so anyway, so fast forward.
You know, I guess to avoid the long, drawn-out, not a canned answer, because, I mean, I know you're good at talking about this place. Can you sum this place up in a very few words, like two or three?
World class, working class. How's that?
Yeah. It was a rescue operation.
Yeah, it was. But originally it was a country club.
Really?
Back in the 50s.
It was private.
It was a private country club, and it was 9 holes.
Huh.
And I don't know what, I don't know how when it switched, it was called the Oceanside Carlsbad Country Club.
Okay.
It was one of the first courses built in San Diego County. They
O's,
say it was...
OCCC.
Yeah.
As the thugs might have called
it. Yeah, So, anyway, fast forward. I don't know how it switched over, but this one guy got the lease. This guy named Lud Koenig, who was this really cool guy, you know, and he loved the kids. Anyway, he's the one that was responsible for putting the clubhouse here. It used to be where Junior's was.
Behind two.
Yeah, behind two. And I think what happened is this was a hole. That was number one. It was a par 5.
Okay. And he's pointing to 18 now.
Yeah,
18. Current 18.
Yeah, and then number two went down there, and they lost some of the city came and took some of the land.
Uh-huh.
The city owns the land.
Eminent domain.
Eminent domain. So he's...
What the fuck? Can you explain eminent domain?
That's when the city just goes, fuck it, I'm going to take that. So
you must have come into this. Like, you must have learned a lot about the city when you dealt with this.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were talking... So we obviously... This podcast is also supported by a vlog on my YouTube channel. We talked a little bit when we played golf just a minute ago about how I didn't realize that you had never thought of doing this until doing it.
Right.
It was sort of like a Hail Mary.
It kind of was. And we, you know, we basically... anyway, let me finish this real quick because I'm going to lose
this. I'm a jumper.
You jumped on me. But anyway, so Lud was responsible for rerouting it from 9 to 18, which I think he did an incredible job. So it went from a par 36 regulation 9 holes to a par 65, 4,500 yards.
Awesome.
You know, there's 8 par 3s, 9 par 4s, and 1 par 5.
Now, at that time, do you understand whether that was common or not, 4,500 yards, things like that?
Not really. I played it as a nine-holer when I went to high school, in high school matches. So I knew it back then. And then I started playing it like 10 years ago with my buddies. And I was like, wow, this is really weird but different and really fun. I used to love to come up here. So then when we moved Link Soul to Oceanside, we started playing a lot because it's like we're literally a mile. Our headquarters is a mile from here. So
it was almost like if you were to unpack all the coincidences that occurred, you're the guy.
Yeah.
Like you're like Neo and they're like, you're the guy, John. And you're like, I'm not the guy.
A little bit. Yeah, because I grew up. Funny thing is, I grew up in Escondido and the course that I actually learned to play golf on was called San Luis Rey Downs. And that closed up about 6 years ago, 5 years ago.
Okay.
And then the
right around the time you came here.
About a year before it came down, I was like, oh, that's a bummer. I love that course. I grew up, we'd go play it sometimes still, but I'd go up there every day in the summertime with my dad.
Right.
And then Escondido Country Club, which was the course I played high school golf on, that closed up.
Jesus.
And then there was another one, Penasquitas, which I played junior golf tournaments at, that closed up. And I was like, and then this started happening, and the city was managing it, and you could tell they were just letting it just creep into no man's land. They weren't watering it. They weren't taking care of the greens.
The city doesn't have, in a lot of cases, a vested interest in maintaining a golf course.
Well, in this case, they didn't, and they kept saying, oh, California water drought. We can't use the water for that. Golf's in the shitter. You know, it was right in 2008, 2009. Nobody was playing golf. Mm. So they pointed to all this, but they were saying, hey, wow, we got a huge piece of property. It's not doing dick as a golf course.
Yeah, it's not.
Let's make this into a huge money grab. In fact,
I would imagine there is very few ways for a piece of property to make less money than to put a golf course on it.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
It's the worst thing.
It could be a campground.
Campground. Right. I mean, a landfill, it would probably make more money.
Probably.
That's fucking frightening.
It's weird. So they put this RFP out to the, you know, development community and all these guys. Well, not all these guys. There's four developers that came in. But the cool thing is it was protected by a municipality that basically said the use has to be public use unless it goes to a vote for the people. So they were trying to lobby everything to go, oh, you know, we need to change this and get a developer to come in and pay for a referendum to go to a vote so the people would actually get to vote and say, yeah, we need to change it. Fuck it. That thing's a mess.
Right.
And so we put a plan in just super benevolent, like, look, we're just going to fix it up. We're going to make it so people can come out and join. We're going to make it a park. We're going to have disc golf. We're going to have, you know, junior golf. It's going to be the home of the North County Junior Golf, which it is. And
you put in a plan that essentially came to be. Everything came to be.
Yeah, and then the whole community jumped. They said, God, he's really going to do that? Fuck, let's do it. Yeah, so everybody jumped on our back, and then we're like, holy shit, we're going to probably get this thing.
So at what point, so you come up with this idea on day one, say, and then how many days later are you like, oh my God, I have to do this?
Well, you know, Jeff Cunningham, who's my co-founder, nephew, partner at Link Soul.
At Pornography.
At Pornography, Jeff. You know, he was playing up here all the time, and then I started playing up here all the time. And then we kind of just started hatching this thing. Kind of laughing about it, thinking, oh, we're not going to do it. You know? But then I thought, eh, fuck. So we did it, and we still didn't think we'd get it until all the local public really got into it. And then we had to go to city council meetings, and it was obvious, like, God, everybody's kind of pulling for us on this thing.
No way.
And yeah, and
What the fuck is a city council meeting like?
Oh, my God. You can go back and look at tapes. You should go back and look.
Really?
It was packed. We had a couple really intense
ones. Dude, this is like a movement, man. Someone should make a film about this.
Oh, it's insane. I mean,
I want to see the tape.
Oh, there was two major ones that was packed, and people from the community would get up and just start yelling and talking and shit.
What were they yelling about?
And I had to get up and pitch our plan, right?
Right.
So it's a really funny story because I'm in Las Vegas at the PGA show. It's the day it's going. But
wait, when was it in Vegas?
This was like, it's in Vegas every year, but it's in August or September.
Oh, it's its secondary PGA show.
So,
mind blown twice.
Yeah, it was weird. So, but we knew the date. I go, I'll come back. I'll get back in plenty of time. to make it to this meeting, like 5 o'clock meeting, right? Well, I'm stuck on the tarmac because of lightning storms in Vegas. And I'm going, fuck, I'm not going to make it. So eventually, and I'm calling my guys. I go, you got to stall. You got to tell. I was supposed to go first. All the other guys went. I come running in, and I'm up.
Right. Oh, it's time to go.
And I'm going, oh, shit. And I get up there, and you're supposed to have like 11 minutes to do, say what you're going to do, right?
Right.
I finish in like four.
Just I'm like racing through it. You know? Right.
Anyway, so long story short, we get it. And then it was sort of like, oh, fuck, we didn't really think we'd get it. We were just trying to look cool. Say we're going to get
right,
it.
Right, right, right. That's hilarious. So now now you are the one. Now you're Neo.
And then the funny thing is, I had this kind of pretty rich guy behind me going, yeah, you know, we're going to do this. And I'm pretty confident because they said, you know, John, you got to put in $3.6 million into this in the first 2 years in order to get the long-term lease, which we have like a 50-year lease.
Right.
And, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, no problem. I got my buddy here. You know, everything's cool. And
why do I feel like you're about to tell me he backed out?
He backed out.
No.
He backed out. And I was going, oh, shit, now. And no, so I'm dragging my feet on, like, doing a lease. Now I got to work out a lease. I'm, like, going, shit, I, you know.
And you got lawyers. And you're paying. Yeah. Now you got friends.
Yeah. Now I got lawyers. Yeah. So, anyway, again, you know, worked it out. And it was lucky. It was really lucky for us because of the drought. I don't know if I've told you this story, but.
Well, a lot of courses ran into a benefit from the drought,
the
actually.
Turf reduction
which
rebate.
Sounds ironic.
I know.
Turf reduction.
Rebate.
Rebate.
So that's
cha-ching.
Why.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, cha-ching. So we ended up.
It saved a lot of golf courses.
Saved a lot of golf courses. We got a $2.3 million rebate grant.
So basically you remove
we were able
half
to,
the turf?
We removed 25 acres of turf, basically.
Out of, what do you say, 56?
We have 75 acres.
75.
But the really funny thing, I could show you an aerial at the time, we had no turf.
You had no turf anyway.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, great, I'll get out whatever shitty turf I have anyway.
So anyway.
So the city gives you money back because by removing the turf, you demand
the
less
state,
water.
No, the state.
The state
it's
gives
state,
you money back.
State of California. So you could do it if you owned a house, you could go, hey, I have 500 square feet, I'm going to take that out. I'm not going to water that anymore. Take it out, put in rocks.
No shit.
They would give you $2 a square foot.
That's $1,000.
But you could do it on a grand scale, which we actually did 27.2 acres, which an acre is 43,500 and some odd feet.
You literally fell into like Monopoly money.
Totally.
And that happened as well, just in the same way that you were writing here.
And I had no idea it was going to happen.
Who came up with that idea?
Well, I did, only because I saw people do it. I go, God, maybe we could do that. And
were
I go,
you?
I'm going to try to do it. So I got all the information online, and I put in an application. Boom, we got it. It's like, you fucking kidding me?
You're
right
just
now?
A fucking. You're like, that is so cool. Because that, what would you say? What characteristic would you say that you have that fits you to do this whole thing?
Oh God, I dive for loose balls. I think
it's just so fucking frugal.
Yeah, I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
Because Wilshire also did this.
Wilshire did it.
I don't know. Was that around the same timeline?
Yeah. Yeah.
Before or after or the same time?
Right around the same time, actually. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Rancho Santa Fe did it.
Oh, okay.
Locally. I saw that. That's what I saw. I saw them do it. I go, God, if they did it, why can't I do it? You know?
Right.
So, anyway, we did it. It was great. It saved the place. That saved the place, really, because, you know. And then, of course, we did put a bunch more money into it, but, you know, not that much. But we got that far ahead.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people, the whole community really came together on this thing and supported it. And we had volunteer days. And
seems like the community comes together every day here.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Yeah.
It's unusual. Do you you travel around, your life has been golf. Mm-hmm. People know your name probably from I find it sort of ironic that there's this, your name exists out there and it has nothing to do with you anymore.
I know.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
I watch Golf Channel. Is it still on Golf Channel?
I don't think it is. It's actually sitting on the shelf right now. Nobody's doing anything with it. It's really weird.
It's funny because, well, I don't know. You know, it seems funny to me because here's Ashworth, John Ashworth, this brand that you had, this was your first golf brand.
Yeah.
The clothing brand. And then now owned by Adidas.
It's actually owned by TaylorMade. It was owned by Adidas.
Right. Confusing.
And then Adidas sold TaylorMade, and with that went the Ashworth brand.
And now, at this time of your life, when you're working on that brand, does golf still mean the same thing to you as it does now?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, because I think what's interesting is the associations with the Golf Channel culture, or the TaylorMade culture, mm-hmm. or whatever it is very different from your current brand, mm. whatever it's Linksole, right? Goat Hill, a little bit, right? Yeah. That's it's an outlier in the golf world, which is kind of sad. Would you say?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's but I think for me personally, I mean, I still have the same. I wake up in the morning trying to do this, promoting golf. I like to try to promote golf, to everyone, and kind of like you do. I mean, just kind of uncover all the cool things and present them, and try to make great clothes.
Right.
Yeah,
God forbid someone should make a good golf outfit.
Yeah, so that hopefully, and our thing is, even back in the Ashworth days, it was like, the reason why I did it is because I couldn't stand all the golf clothes, all the polyester,
right.
crap that back then, with the red pants and the white belts and all this stuff. And it was like, Linksole was kind of deja vu, it was all happening again. I was like, oh my God, why can't we just wear stuff that is just comfortable and you can wear to a bar afterwards and not have people point and laugh at you and like, what are you doing?
You've done a really good job of the five panel pant, the Linksole, not the five panel, the five pocket
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the pant. It looks like, it literally looks like you could either be an Italian man who's, somewhere in between painting, laying a brick, or boarding his yacht. It's a great fucking pair of pants, and it's hard to find in golf. And, mm-hmm. and what's funny to me is like, I don't know, you got this, like, it's interesting to hear that you're the same person throughout. Cause I was thinking maybe with, your first company, it was kind of, something different.
It was different in the fact that I had no fucking clue what I was doing. It was kind of a luck box thing.
I'm sensing a theme.
That's what I mean. There's a guiding hand out there that, that just sort of things go usually a decent way.
Right.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. I've definitely appreciate that in life. I have it.
Yeah.
I've got it. Yeah.
Mm.
Let's see. I had a question. I could have sworn I had a question. I think what I was kind of thinking of was whatever about the first company. But now we're here.
Right.
I look at Linksole. I see you, right, a lot in it. Was that different? Was that a different decision for you to put so much of you in it?
I actually try not to put me in.
But your ethos. Your ideas.
Yeah, I mean, the ethos hasn't really changed, and of course Jeff, Jeff Cunningham, Pornography?
John.
I'm not very
How old are you,
good at
John?
This. I know. No, I'm a geezer. I'm past the whole digital thing. I'm actually.
Now you're good though. You're out there.
Anyway,
what's your 33 Ashworth? Athros 33.
Yeah. No, it's just John Ashworth.
Ashworth. Oh, but your logo is a 33.
Oh yeah.
Is that a race car? Your avatar.
No, it's always kind of been the lucky number.
Just lucky number 33?
Yeah, lucky number 33.
Jesus' death or rebirth?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that. It's just, it's this mystical, universal magic thing.
You find golf to be a mystical game?
Oh, it can be.
Yeah.
It can be for sure.
When is it for you?
When you're in certain places, certain moments, I mean, it's... it's for me, I don't like for you too, it's kind of all encompassing. It's what we do, right? I mean, it's what we do. I mean, I've had some really special moments on a golf course, that's for sure. I mean, have you been to Bali?
I have.
Bali Hundara?
I didn't play golf.
Oh.
I drove by it.
You got to go up to the volcano.
So
the
that's not the one with the statues, is it?
No, it's the one that's up in the crater of the volcano.
Whoa. Inside of a volcanic crater?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a... but it's so old, it's like a tropical rainforest. So these humongous trees on the walls of the crater, and then you're down in this thing. And Peter Thompson built it.
What?
Back in the 70s.
The Australian five-timer?
Yeah. And you, when you're playing, you hear the chanting monks like in the villages.
We got to mark that on the
you
list.
Bali Hundara.
We're going.
You got to
go. Book a flight. We're going to go to LAX. We're going to be there in an hour.
Absolutely.
Colts just got the grin.
And then I'm sure you've read Golf in the Kingdom.
Well, I mean, Golf in the Kingdom was so early on for me that in my golf experience in life that I would assume that may have been one of the original glue.
Mm-hmm.
Original
glue
that stuck me.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I think it would be hard to play golf for a guy like me and not have that sort of avenue to relate to the game.
Yeah.
Because I think I would just turn into a fucking a homicidal psychopath.
Yeah, right.
I think I would have, I wouldn't be able to keep a full set of clubs because I would go so crazy.
Right.
But yeah, without those books, when did you get into Golf in the Kingdom?
I read Golf in the Kingdom right before I went to Bali one year, like in the would have been like early '90s, right? And then the interesting thing is I had a friend that knew Michael Murphy, and I said I want to meet Michael Murphy, so I met Michael Murphy. We got to be actually pretty good friends. And
what year is this?
This would have been 90.
Oh, so Murphy's still playing.
91. Well,
I've met him.
I said, hey, I'm going to Scotland. You want to go to Scotland?
No.
He goes, yeah. So me and Barry Grimes is the original, the guy that drew the Golf Man logo.
For Ashworth. Right.
And which, by the way, is a pretty good story, which I can tell you. But
do it. Jump in right now.
I was going to start Ashworth, and I didn't even know we were going to call it Ashworth, which...
Didn't want to call it that.
I didn't want to.
Yeah,
my partner wanted to. I'm like, oh, God. Okay. You know, we were hurting for a name. We were too far down the track. I go, okay, we'll go with it. And so I go, I think we need a logo, kind of like, you know, the Polo Pony, but I got something for golf. And a buddy of mine in L.A. knew this artist and this art, you know, and he goes, hey, my friend Barry, you know, he's kind of into golf, and maybe you should talk to him. It's like, okay, give me his number. So I called him. You know, back before emails and, you know, everything else. I actually called him on the phone in my house.
Did he answer?
Yeah.
Was there a voicemail?
I don't think there was.
I don't think you could.
Yeah.
Barry was only getting a direct hit.
Yeah. So.
Did he know who you were?
No. So I told him, you know, hey, Lane.
How old are you at this time?
26.
No shit, dude.
And I go, hey. You know, I'm starting this clothing company, and it's going to be kind of a golf, you know, lifestyle clothing. You know, I want it to be, you know, kind of old school but new school. I really like Scotland, although I haven't even been yet. I love Lynx golf, you know, and the feel of that old school. And
by the way, I mean, just to give more.
Yeah.
This
was 1986.
This is 86. There's no Abandoned Dunes. There's no Cabot.
No.
There's no fucking...
No.
There's nothing.
Not.
There's no Lynx golf in America.
No.
How would you even seen Lynx golf?
I just loved watching the British Open.
British Open.
Yeah. I just loved it. I loved when they played that tournament. I'd get up early in the morning.
Right. Who were your favorite? There was no TiVo. You weren't TiVo and shit. You were watching it live.
No, you watch it live.
Who were some of your favorite golfers at the time?
Oh, my God. You know, I was a big Arnie fan.
Okay.
I like Gary Player and, you know, Johnny Miller. And although he wasn't even, well, he was kind of, yeah, no, he was there. Johnny Miller, Ben Crenshaw, right, and stuff like that. So I was telling Barry about this, and unbeknownst to me, he's actually drawing, you know, as artists do, right? He's drawing on a little piece of paper, boom, as I'm talking. He's, okay, next time you come to L.A., let's get together. I was in Denver at the time. I go, okay, boom. Come out to L.A., we get together. And he goes, well, was it something like this? I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what, you know, so that was pretty cool.
Talk about like collective kind of conscious.
Yeah.
And the logo was born.
And we ended up working together for like 10 years.
Wow.
You know, the whole time.
You came to L.A.?
I moved to L.A.
Right.
I moved to L.A. from Denver. And just, shit, man, school of hard knocks, you know, trying to figure out the rag trade and not knowing anything about it.
Everyone who's, it's sort of like restaurants. Anyone who's either in restaurants or fashion says, don't do it.
Oh, yeah, no.
No one suggests that you should get into those businesses.
And then once you're in it, it's kind of what you know, and it's like, oh shit, I don't know what else I'd do. I'm not going to be a doctor or a lawyer or anything like that. So,
how did you get talked into doing it again? Because I mean, you know, we don't need to get into details, yeah, but you weren't happy with how Ashworth ended up.
Well, I was really happy. I mean, I was really happy. I was enjoying the heck out of it, and then it's kind of a long story.
Yeah, we don't need to get into it. Okay, but okay. I guess I was under the impression that you were left with like, I don't want to do that again.
No, not really. I didn't even want to really leave. I just, I wanted to go kind of a different direction than some of the people in my company wanted to.
Right.
And then our board of directors kind of was, it got to the point where it wasn't fun because, you know, we were value engineering product. We weren't making it as good as quality as I wanted to make it at the time.
Because the volume was going up?
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, anyway, I wanted to do different things, which included doing things in Scotland. But getting back to Michael Murphy.
Yeah, there we go.
Ripping back there, Scotland.
There we go.
He ended up, Barry and Michael and I went to Scotland for a week and played golf. And it was the most wild time. It was so much fun, you know.
Quick break. If you haven't heard of Golf in the Kingdom, I was told it was the best-selling sports novel ever written.
Could be.
I don't know if that's accurate, but
well, one of the things was it sold more copies every year for like I don't know, however many years, 30 years. It like every year would sell more copies. I don't know if it's still like that or not, but it had a good run.
It's this story of I think it's semi-autobiographical.
A little bit.
This young man is on a trip to an Indian ashram. Stops off in Scotland to play golf, a game that he kind of grew up with, but didn't seem to be a crazy golfer. Ends up meeting this wild and mystical caddy in Scotland, and that caddy basically teaches him the what does he teach him, John?
Just kind of the inner part of golf, the spiritual part of golf, the, you know, getting close to your own soul through the game, and you know, and how this life is like, you know, the threat of a kite, you know? I mean, it's so...
Explain. What do you mean?
Well, just, you know, especially in today's world, it's like so... you know, the world's such kind of a scary place with so many pressures and things happening and, like, you know... But you can escape to golf. That's the way I look at it. I look at it, there's two worlds. There's the golf world and there's the real world.
You make coffee in the morning? Let me ask you one question about that coffee you make in the morning. Do you know when it was roasted? If you bought it at the grocery store, it's been stale for months. Sad news, I know. You go ahead and shed a tear. If you bought it at the local cafe, you've probably overpaid for it. Here's the deal. Bixby, B-I-X-B-Y, they cut out our least favorite guy. They cut out the middleman. I mean, the truth is, if you are the middleman, you're rock solid, but since we're not the middlemen, we actually want to get rid of them. We're the men on the outside, or the women. Moving on, that wasn't supposed to take that long. They roast it the day you order it, and they ship it right from the roaster to your doorstep. Save on the price and save on the freshness. You get more freshness. More freshness, half the price. I don't know what the deal is. Anyway, I've been roasting I went to the roasting facility the other day, and my man Miles started this really cool company, and it's a high-quality outfit, that's for sure. Also, it's like the Vice Balls of Coffee that Jeff wrote that. That's pretty good. I do like that. Better coffee, better price, and always free shipping. That's actually a really cool part of it. You get the free shipping. So there you go. Check out BixbyCoffee.com. That's BixBY.com. It's going to get delivered to your door. And, you know, once you get the coffee, you'll be awake for it the next time it gets delivered because it's a subscription thing. You know, you get it regularly. You don't have to go to the store for it. So anyway, check it out. BixbyCoffee.com. All right, everybody. Precision Pro. Here's the thing about Precision Pro. They got started with a simple question. Quote, why can't anyone make a quality rangefinder at a reasonable price? I also have this question. That was 4 years ago, and now Precision Pro Golf makes the NX7 series rangefinder that's been named the best value rangefinder in 2018. That's a big thing. By mygolfspy.com said that. MyGolfSpy. Anyway, their rangefinders contain all the bells and whistles that golfers love without the bloated price that other companies charge. Because to be honest, nobody likes bloating, especially when it comes in your price tag. The NX7 Pro Slope Rangefinder is the number one selling rangefinder on Amazon.com right now. Is that true? Is it the number one?
No one's in my house. Colt, Snowball, and Max are all in my house. Is it the number one? Check. Is Precision Pro really the number one selling rangefinder? I don't want to purport false claims. Colt's checking. Anyway, that's on sale for $218, and that's $30 off its normal price. Can you believe that? It offers slope-adjusted yardages, pulse vibration technology, which, as a human being, I love. I love pulse vibrations, good or bad. 2-year warranty. Dang, that's 2 years, man. That's a long time. That's longer than I've ever had a rangefinder. My last one was stolen, so if you have my rangefinder right now, it says Eric Lang on it. You're an asshole. Also, it comes with industry-leading precision care package that includes a free lifetime battery replacement service. A lot of script. I'm almost done, guys. Hang on. Any news, Colt? Still no news. We're waiting. For golfers, confidence is a wonderful thing. Doubt is not. Precision Pro understands that, and it's why their rangefinder is the perfect combo of performance and price. I love combos like that. Oh, my God. NX7 rangefinder is, well, look at all these reviews. Does what I wanted. Love it. Just what I was looking for. Price was right. From Lowell H. Danny B. says, I like it. We're reading real reviews. 5 stars. 781 reviews. Dude, here's the deal. They sent it to me, but I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. We're going to see. Right now, the NX7 Pro is on sale for $30 off at precisionprogolf.com. 2-year warranty, 90-day money-back guarantee, lifetime battery replacement service. Lifetime battery replacement. Whoa, Cadillac rangefinder with a VW price. I like it. That guy I want to hang out with, Major Duffer. Let's get Major Duffer on the pod because I want to see this. But the battery replacement service is crazy. Seriously, lifetime battery replacement service. For me. I'm just learning about this. Swing with confidence. Hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. Guys, sounds like if you don't buy this, you're the idiot. So anyway, ciao for now.
Adidas golf shoes, y'all. I've worn lots of shoes since I started playing golf 7 years ago, but I haven't found anything that matches Adidas. It's actually very true. Boost, all capitals, folks, B-O-O-S-D. Boost is the best cushioning in the game, and they test all their shoes so that you get the stability you need for the swing that you want, or whatever. Whether it's the Tour 360, which is all around a great shoe, or the Adicross Bounce, that's what I like. I typically wear, I like the Adipure, y'all, because they're classy as fuck. And I also like the cross-knit Boost, y'all. It's an older model, but they look kind of fly. Everyone thinks I'm wearing running shoes on the course, but no. I've got stability, and I've got little nubs to keep me in check when I over-rotate with the big stick. Everything that they make is so versatile and comfortable, but most importantly, they're all built to perform on the course. Visit adidas.com and click on the golf section or visit your local retailer. Maybe just go online, y'all. Who wants to go to a local retailer? Let's face it. To find the pair that's right for you, you can also follow Adidas Golf on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook for all the latest news and releases. Check it out.
But we actually played like under a full moon at St. Andrews.
Too. No.
We played.
You snuck out?
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
We played 2-17. So good.
What'd you make on 17 in the middle of the night?
I don't remember. But it wasn't bad, though. It was pretty good.
I mean, I feel like I would be in the hotel.
Yeah.
I would be someone. That's cool. Wow, that's really wonderful. I was inspired to, when I met Michael Murphy, I said, you know, I was inspired by your book, and I snuck on Cypress Point. And he said, that's great, me too.
Did you get caught?
No.
I got caught.
You did?
Yeah.
At Cypress?
Yeah. Yeah, when I was 17 years old, I was with Jeff Hart. We drove up to watch, you know, I think it was the U.S. Open. I mean, but it might have just been the Crosby or something, but we snuck on number 2.
Right.
The par 5.
Yeah.
And we're up there and we're thinking, oh, man, we're going to make it. We're going to get past 2. And out comes this, I don't know, it was this car. It was dry. It was Jim Langley, the pro there for millions of years. And he goes, hey, boys, did you know this was a private golf course?
In the middle of the day?
We're like, no, is it? Yeah, man. it was like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my, that's bold.
Yeah, it was kind of.
He gave you such an out, though.
Oh, he did.
Did you know this is a private golf course?
He was so nice. I got to know him years later, too.
And you since played there without any issue.
I played there a few times. I love that place.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's probably my number one.
Really?
Yeah. If you were going to go, what's your number one car? I would say probably second.
If I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Well, let's pretend I did, and now I'll continue on. Point. Why?
I just love it.
Yeah.
It just has a vibe. Like you were talking about a vibe. It's got a vibe.
Yeah.
Kind of transcends everything, doesn't it? It feels like you're playing in a spiritual place, for sure. Like a otherworldly sort of vibe, I think. Do you think that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I've only played it once, and so it's hard for me to really digest it entirely, but I experienced it as it kind of is very unusual in the sense it's kind of, I guess it's like probably more like Spyglass than a lot of other courses in the sense that, like, for me, you kind of have what I think I'm actually maybe just realizing right now, you have this wonderful view, right? And you have this wonderful hole. And like a lot of great courses, they save it for the kind of the end, right? Like 17, 16, mm-hmm. 17, 16, mm-hmm. a lot of great courses. Mm-hmm. But what you kind of have is this fleeting moment throughout the round. And you're kind of forced to, in some ways, appreciate not the mundane, but the holes that aren't the signature holes. And in some ways, I remember some of those holes even more poignantly than those finishing four.
Yeah. Yeah, they all go together so nicely, I think. But and then the mark of a great course is you're on like four or five and you go, oh my God, this is going too fast. It's got to slow down.
Cyprus was one of the first really, really nice courses I played. And I had that experience constantly where I was just, the experience was slipping through my fingers like sand. Mm-hmm. And I found it kind of tragic, actually. Mm-hmm. I had a hard time dealing with that experience of just the greatness of it.
More than any other course, that course gives you that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, anyway.
It was very strange. And like I said, it was almost like a lesson in impermanence. Mm. Yeah. Which is like, it's making me very sad right now as I think about it, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It's very Buddhist-like.
You must have a really wonderful motto that's not working class meets world class, or some other motto that you kind of live by.
It's only work if you'd rather be doing something else.
It's only work if you'd rather be doing something else. I've never heard that.
Oh, come on. Really?
Never heard it.
Really?
Never heard it. I've heard...
That was a motto back in the Ashford days, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's only work if you'd rather be doing something else. Yeah. Well...
Did you have that motto?
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. In fact, Colt and I were talking this morning about how a lot of people say, oh, you have a dream job, right? We have the dream job. And I won't argue with that. Mm-hmm. We do. Mm-hmm. But it is equal parts dream and job. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't a job, I wouldn't appreciate it, because then there's no... It would be like... I don't keep score insanely with golf, but I do keep score and I keep track. But I mean, if you made a hole in one on every hole, you wouldn't really play golf anymore, I would think.
Right, right. Yeah, maybe you would. It'd be kind of fun.
And then Cole brought up Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, right.
And his wonderful record.
Right.
Any other topics we can come up with randomly for the last few minutes of this? Any thoughts? Anything on your mind currently? What are you doing now? Colt likes to ask, what are you obsessed with? I like that question.
Oh, really? I got so many balls in the air right now. You know,
we're fixing the bathrooms.
Yeah,
at the
fixing
go.
The bathrooms. The go. One new mail. Oh, boom.
Is that a
cop? Yeah. Well, no, it's time to leave. God.
We got the wishbone coming up.
Got the wishbone coming.
I don't know when this is going to air.
Yeah, right. Maybe before that. So the wishbone brawl, which is something we made up last year, and Eric was kind enough to come and be
he's talking
a color
about me.
Commentary. Yeah.
That was fun. Maddie G and I got to meet for the first time.
Oh, that was great.
That was like a really big moment
and
for me.
And you were actually, I think I asked you, why don't you do a podcast? You go, I'm thinking about it. Blah,
oh,
blah,
my
blah.
Goodness.
Do you remember that?
That's
I
right.
I wasn't talking about
well,
this.
And because the truth is, the pod started in February or March, but we'd been honestly trying it for months, for maybe even a year, maybe nine months, 10 months.
Okay.
Because we had tried all different formats and what is it going to be, and then... Finally, we just sort of pulled everything away from the tree. No ornaments. It's a tree. Okay,
right.
Done.
Yeah.
What do I know? I know golf, and I know some humor, and I know how to travel.
Right.
And that was
it. This is great.
But the Wishbone Brawl is an event unlike any other.
It's unlike any other. You were there. You saw it. We didn't know what was going to happen. It was just brilliant. It was like at the time, it was we got Xander was just coming off winning the the tour championship.
Right.
And
local boy. How long have you known Xander?
That was the first day I met him.
No shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's down with the crew, like Charlie. Oh yeah,
he knows Charlie and obviously, and he knows David Emmerich, who runs the North County Junior Golf. Him and David, whose nickname is Devo, so I don't like to call him David, but Devo's son, Evan, and Xander know each other really good.
Right.
And and Xander went to San Diego State, which Ryan Donovan's daughter had that terrible disease. So we actually raised money for that, which was great.
Yeah, T-shirts.
Yeah, but we had a blast. I mean, it was, and this year we're going to do it. It's going to be Xander and Charlie versus Dean Wilson and Mike Weir.
And so people can come to the event, buy tickets, support a charity that is TBD, or do you know?
No, we're going to do Charlie's Foundation and North County Junior Golf. And then from there, they're both 501c3s, then they can help the community. Do you know what I mean? Because they can give it away.
Most of all, you can watch some sick golf up close, no ropes, one hole at a time.
Hitting persimmon woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So,
what was Xander's takeaway from hitting persimmons?
Oh, he loved it.
Because he was banging that
ball. He was bombing. He was going, I'm going to put this 3-wood in my bag as my 5-wood.
No.
That's what he said.
That would have been money.
I know.
At Carnoustie last year when he was just like sneaking up there on the last day.
Yeah.
How about, did you watch any of that at Carnoustie?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Did you see Xander and the baby?
Oh, my God.
That was a moment for me.
I love Xander. I wish he was a Link Soul guy, but...
No, not yet. Maybe
we don't have the bread.
You need some. You need some more wheat in the field. Got to grow, but then you struggle.
Yeah,
I sometimes feel like, what does growth even mean?
Right?
Like what?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Well, and I think you and I are a lot alike in terms of like, hey, I appreciate the tour and everything, but golf to me is about what we did today. You know, it's like sometimes I think professional golf hijacks the game a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like
it does.
I mean, I love the majors, but that's like a teensy tiny little bit of the whole game. You know what I mean? It's like it gets so much attention, and I think it's the great thing about golf. It's just a game for the people.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, everybody can just they need the release. They need to get away from the real world and come out and try to move that little ball into that little hole. Do you know what I mean?
And we played 6 holes today, which is it's a really good number.
That's a good amount.
That's a really good amount.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would like to see a course with 3 sixes.
I would too. I've said that many a time.
Really?
I actually told Lou Thompson, who owns Forest Dunes, because he's going to build another course. I go, God, it'd be cool to build, 3 6-hole loops.
Yeah.
That come right back to the clubhouse.
Yeah, and each could kind of, not be very different, but be kind of different, right? I mean, so I guess in talking about, I hate this subject, but I guess we could talk about it, the future of golf, right? I mean, I feel like I hate talking about it. Why do I hate talking about it,
John? I don't know. I'm excited about it. I think we're going to go through a big renaissance.
What do you mean?
I just think there's movements like, getting golf back to the, to the roots and the people and, stripping up, like almost your tree analogy, like you took out all the shit. It's just a tree, it's golf. It's just like, my theory is this, tell you what my theory is the fact that I really believe in the big picture, people in general are good. The good, evil thing. I think people want to be good anyway. But I think if you take the whole population of the world and then you take golfers, I think golfers are the cream of the crop in being good people. Do you know what I mean? They've got this built-in ethic for the most part and respect and sportsmanship. And so I think if you can teach kids that and play golf recreationally and, in the spirit of, goodwill and everything, the world would be a better place. Do you know what I mean?
I totally agree.
It's like you're a product of your environment. So golf courses are an environment that you become a product of. And if you could take that away, the world is going to be a better place.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. That's what's going to happen 100 years from now. I guarantee it. The golf isn't that old. If you go right into the geological vein of golf, it's just a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, in 1850? That wasn't that long ago, really. I mean, it's a long time ago, but there's only like 12 golf courses.
That's true. There were really not that many for several hundred years.
Yeah. So we had the big bullshit in the 90s. See, I'm hoping the Tiger thing this time activates golf in the right way and not like the 90s.
Mm, not I real think estate every, embellishments.
Yeah. And, you know, more just take it to the people.
Yeah.
Take it down to the working class. The working class needs to have golf.
Yeah.
But I know it's a pipe dream, but I just believe in it.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a pipe dream. It seems to be happening.
Yeah.
We have, obviously, unfortunately, not too many examples right now, right?
Right.
I mean, we've got a lot of great public courses around.
There is.
What do you think?
I wish the USGA and the PGA would jump in more. I just don't think they jump in enough, and that disappoints me.
Well, you know what I found strange is the Olympics, L.A.
Right.
Where's the course? Riv. Don't you think it should be Wilson?
Yeah.
Don't you think that they should do a Bethpage on Wilson?
Is that? I didn't even know that. Is that happened? Is that what's going on?
They picked Riv.
That's already happened?
That's what I heard. I haven't read it or seen it accredited, but I mean, like, hey, guess what? We've all seen Riv. Why don't we take all that money and put it in a course that could use it?
Yeah.
You know, Wilson could all of a sudden be like an amazing. Yeah, you've got Torrey Pines. You've got Chambers Bay. You've got Bethpage. But you got nothing in L.A.?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the course needs to start charging $90 or $150.
No, I think there should be free golf courses.
Yeah, well, it would be cool if Wilson became one rad golf course. Harding became, like, I don't know, a more accessible children's course like you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Like, I'm not saying it needs to be much nicer because I'm actually... We were playing today, and you were like, I wish the fairways were better or whatever, and, you know, you're dealing with a summer without a ton of water.
Yeah.
That's not bothering me at all. Like,
no,
I mean,
it's part of, you know, it's whatever.
We just got back from Scotland, and I mean, the greens are all perfect, but a lot of things are brown and weird and fucked up.
I know, that's cool. I love that.
I love that.
Yeah, I fucking love that.
What do you think, you know, when you look at golf, you know, and the playing of golf and sort of those lessons that everybody talks about, there must be something a little bit more deeper than what most people answer this question with, which is like patience or something like that. You must have gotten something from golf that's pretty profound that we could talk about for a little bit.
Well, it kind of goes back, and I've told this story before, so if people have heard it, I'm sorry. But, you know, when I got into the game, it was literally my mom said, you're either going to Sunday school or you're going to go caddy for your dad. I was like 8 years old. Like, I'm going to go caddy for my dad.
Yeah.
That's how I got into the game. He was a school teacher. And so, I mean, I don't know. For me, it's just, I believe there is definitely some kind of great spirit and, you know, greater power. And I just think you can find it out here as easily as you can find it in a church. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
I don't know.
You went to instead of going to Sunday school, you went to green reading school.
Yeah.
And you probably got the same thing.
Yeah. But I just think that there is, you know, over the years, and there is so many great inherent qualities in the game and characters and people and things that have happened. And, you know, I love the unsung heroes are the greenskeepers, you know, that actually take care of the courses. Mm. And, you know, I love that part of it. You know, I got my degree in agronomy. I thought that
when?
Was at Arizona in 1982.
Oh, okay, so that was originally a career path for you.
Yeah, it was. It was.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I just never kind of floundered, went and caddied on the tour.
Who'd you caddy for?
Mark Wiebe.
No shit.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did you make any money?
No. No.
I guess he didn't either.
I lived in my car most of the time.
No, what kind of car?
Jetta.
Nice.
Reclining seat.
Nice. Ouch. Red or what color?
It's blue.
Tan?
It's blue. Blue. Like a little navy one.
What, you have a lot of experience with meditation.
Yeah.
How did you fall into that?
Well, my wife is from Thailand, and she's Buddhist. So I've just been around it, you know, from a Buddhist point of view.
But Thai Buddhists, are they meditators or?
Oh, yeah.
They are. Time. They actually meditate.
Oh, yeah. I'll show you a great podcast. I was going to show, when you brought it up before, I was going to show you this.
Check it out.
This you should
Okay, it's called The Power of Present Karma.
No, it's the Dharma Talks.
Okay.
DharmaTalks.org.
DharmaTalks.org. Okay. Yeah. So if you're interested in meditation, because I do get a lot of messages about
that. If you are interested in meditation, that is an excellent, excellent podcast.
DharmaTalks.org. Dharma with an H D H A.
Yeah.
Dharma Talks.
Yeah. D H A M M A T A L K.
Oh, Dharma Talks.
Dharma Talks. Dharma Talks.
I fucked it up.
Sorry.
But
anyway.
So you meet her. And then what, you meditate or you date?
Oh, I met her in L.A. like back when I was, starting Ashworth.
Right.
Yeah. And just over the course of time, I mean, that's 30-some years,
She sort of pulls you into it? She says, you want to try this? Or
no, I mean, just being around. Just being around it.
Right.
Being around, like, this monastery is up in Valley Center. It's really cool. It's in this avocado grove. And this monk is he's a Caucasian guy. From New York, but he spent 20 years in Thailand.
Whoa.
Studying, and he translates all Buddha stuff. And so it's interesting to me. I mean, it's more of a path, like a philosophy in a way. It's not, I don't even know if I'd consider myself a Buddhist, but I do meditate and I do enjoy that whole mindfulness, staying in the present moment. It's all we got, really.
When people ask you where they should go to learn to meditate, what do you say? He's grimacing. He's squinting.
Well, it's so funny. I mean, you can pick up. There's a lot of books for sure on mindfulness and meditation, but it's in to find a little place in your own space. Just make it your own. You just need to sit and learn how to breathe.
seem like an Ashworth answer.
It's
just
very
figure it out. Dude.
Yeah, just figure it out. It's breathe in, breathe out.
Have you spent much time in Thailand because of your relationship?
Yeah, I've spent a fair amount of time in Thailand. Yeah.
What? Have you played any golf there?
I have. A golf there is so cool. Have you played it?
I have.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, it's money, dude.
It's great because people that have. I'm sure you've done this. So then. Have you played with four guys over there? Four people?
I mean,
my experience is like when you go, and I've played a lot of golf over there. So, I've used a few factories over there. So,
oh, okay.
And their guys are keen golfers. Thai people love golf.
Oh, they go crazy.
They're nuts. So you go to these nice country clubs too, and you go and you get out and you each have a golf cart, and you each have a little golf caddy lady. With their uniform,
all
with
female.
All female, with their little hats and their little gloves and they're fully clothed. And
they look like they're at the nail salon.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll have two for every guy because one holds the umbrella for you and stuff like that, right? Have you done that?
I didn't get an umbrella holder.
Oh my God, it's crazy. It's fun though, and they're smiling. They can read the putts really good. They can't speak English, but you're kind of communicating. Yeah.
And they just pull your club. They're like, "Here's your club, whatever."
They get to know your game a little bit, yeah. It's fun.
What, where have you played around? Like, I mean, where's your wife from?
She's from Bangkok.
Okay.
Yeah.
Crazy city.
Yeah.
Crazy. Like, it's just always on.
I love it. Oh, it's always on.
It's like
it's
the inside of a watch.
Yeah.
It's crazy, dude.
It might be broken a little bit, but, but no, she's great. I met her in LA. She went to school in England, boarding school.
So okay.
And then she went to art school in Paris. So she, English accent, can speak French, gorgeous. When I met her, and it's like, I was like, oh my God, this is too good to be true here.
Well, and now you're sounding like a movie because here you are, this sort of steward of the community land, and she's a florist.
Yeah, she's a florist.
And you're just sort of, you each have your craft, and it involves.
We've been very lucky. Yeah.
Organic matter of the universe.
Yeah.
Any favorite books?
At the time I was when I was starting Ashworth, I started reading Ayn Rand books.
Okay.
Have you read any Ayn Rand books?
I haven't.
Atlas Shrugged.
I don't read that much. Some people ask me that question, so I thought I should ask you.
Yeah, Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead and stuff like that. That was pretty, that's a pretty pivotal, didn't know I was going to be a quote unquote entrepreneur, kind of thing. But that's really sort of that whole philosophy of just making a go of it. That was pretty helpful. What else? I do read a lot of Buddhist books.
Uh-huh. Just,
you know, because it's interesting.
Top one.
God, they don't even really. This guy translates all these things. They didn't, you know. They're mostly about meditation.
You're reading old ones that are translated.
No. Oh, well, Entering the Stream.
I don't know that one.
That's a good one. Yeah. I don't know who wrote that, but that's a good book.
Entering the Stream.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do on Sunday if you're a pro.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to enter that stream.
Stream of consciousness. Anyway.
Awesome, man. Well, any questions for me? I feel like God, we kind of.
I hope I haven't been.
What are you talking about? This has been a great interview.
Oh, good. I hope so.
You know why? Because it's just been a casual conversation where we've actually had the chance to. Because I don't know. I mean, we see each other.
Yeah.
Routinely.
Occasionally. Yeah.
There's always something going on.
You're always. I mean, I see you going. Man. Yeah. You're going.
I was actually on two planes at once the other day.
Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, it is. It is a lot of. So the travel. It's funny. You know what's really funny is it's hard for me to get down here.
Yeah.
Because
you know you're always welcome here.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to get down here because when I'm in LA, mm-hmm. guess what? The last thing I want to do is
get in a car and drive.
Leave.
Yeah, I know.
But
I know.
You know,
I don't blame you.
If you would rather be doing something else than it's work.
Mm. Yeah.
And so Charlie made time, right? And then he came down here, you were here.
Yeah.
And that for me is a wonderful day waking up at 5 AM and
Just
finishing the day here with you.
Yeah.
That's so
good stuff.
I really appreciate it. And you know, I'm just like, I don't know, man. You've got me inspired about what the fuck's gonna happen with the rest of my life.
Oh yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. You got a good path going, man.
Who knows?
Just uncover it and shine a light on it, and you know. More people should play golf, don't you think?
I agree.
I really do.
I agree.
I think they're intimidated. I think we need to drop the intimidation factor. I think that's what happens here. People aren't as intimidated.
Well, there's zero intimidation here.
You got the music going. You got no dress code.
No.
You know, come as you are. Behave, you know, properly.
Yeah.
You know, respect people, respect the place, and have a good time.
You know, I think I clocked on the way in here that there's music coming out of the clubhouse onto the range in the putting green, and I've never seen that. Oh, you know what? I've seen it.
Oh, good.
Madison Club.
Oh, good, yeah.
Couldn't be more different.
Right. Yeah, that's like...
Madison,
but, you know, they're more like Goat Hill than any place.
That's true.
The Discovery properties.
They're the Goat Hill with where built for
billionaires.
Where the O is just a zero on 100,000 rather than a greatest of. Well, dude, thank you for the time.
Thank you,
I really appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you check out Goat Hill if you're in town. Check out the Wishbone Brawl. Check out Link Soul.
We should do a Link Soul code, which I know this is in the future, so we can figure out. So if people are watching and they want to go to Link Soul and do a code, let's say Eric.
Listeners of this podcast, if you want to check out some Link Soul gear,
Eric.
Code Eric, E-R-I-K.
E-R-I-K.
Yeah.
33. And you'll get 33% off.
Holy shit.
For a limited time.
For a limited time.
Yeah.
All right. So whenever we post this, check that out.
And I hope I don't
That's
get
really
in trouble.
Nice of you, John.
I hope I don't get in trouble for that.
I don't know. I could get in trouble or you could get in trouble, but I say fuck it.
I say fuck it too. It's
fuck the contracts.
It's my favorite number.
Fuck the contracts.
You're one of my favorite people.
Oh, dude, that's really sweet.
So,
here's
Let's
thing.
Do it.
While we're on the topic of fucking contracts, you make the best shorts in the biz.
Oh, good. Thanks,
dude.
Man.
Those. By the way, I spotted those shorts at another company today, and he was like, I'm not. Shh. I was like, those are made out of recycled bottles, right? And he's like, yeah, but just I'm not keeping on the down low. He was literally at one of your competitors.
Uh-oh. Don't tell anybody.
Anyway, that's really sweet of you.
Yeah, yeah. I think we can pull that off. We'll pull that off.
Well, hopefully we can because I don't edit the podcast.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I'll advise you before we go live.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Check out Link Soul, everybody. Now you have no choice. You're paying 67%.
And come out to Goat Hill Park because, you know
what?
Come out
to Goat Hill and pay double, motherfucker.
Yeah, because it's going to be a lot less than what you just paid at Link Soul. 33%.
By the way, don't buy $10,000 worth of shit and send it to China. Dude, John, thank you. I'm going to give you a handshake.
All right,
really
thanks,
appreciate it.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Everybody,
thank you.
Have a great week. And again, I'll see you in the shower.